Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barlingham Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett. Alas, Manny Barling cannot be with us this week, but I'm sure I speak for all of our listeners in wishing him a speedy recovery. And before we get into the serious business of news, crime and politics, I want to wish all of our listeners a very, very Merry Christmas. Okay, joining us on the panel this week are well-known LA-based attorney, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here. Happy holidays to everyone.
And well, that was very politically correct.
Yeah, I'm trying to be politically correct these days. I have trouble with that sometimes.
And also from the wilds of LA, the owner of Sunset Protection, the always colorful John Perry. John, welcome.
Good afternoon, fellas, and Simon. I hope you loaded up on Bubble and Squeak for breakfast this morning because I'm metaphorically gunning for you today.
Perfect. And for those listeners unfamiliar with Bubble and Squeak, it's a classic English dish involving leftover mashed potatoes and leftover vegetables made into patties and fried. It's actually quite yum. And no, I didn't have any this morning. Unfortunately, our regular panelist, Sam Moffey, can't be with us today. He's suffering from the flu. I suspect it's probably due to a lack of Bubble and Squeak in his diet.
I got to try that sometime, Simon.
Oh, why do they call it Squeak? Because the vegetables squeak when you chew them? Why is that?
No, because
no,
of the noise
it's the sound
the
it makes.
It.
Right, yeah. It's the sound that it makes.
I like it.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's really quite delightful. Ideal breakfast food. okay, on with the program. I have been chomping at the bit over the not-quite press conference that the NRA put on Friday. In fact, to call it a press conference is wrong. It was a 25-minute long manifesto by CEO of the NRA, Wayne Lapierre. Frankly, I was disappointed by what he had to say. Absolutely everything but guns was to blame. Peter, what are your initial thoughts?
Well, you know, it's I actually expected them, the NRA and gun advocates everywhere, to actually take a kind of conciliatory approach to this. And that they would offer some sort of, compromise on something in an effort to try to galvanize public support in their favor. And instead, you get this, which is just a swing to extremism. And in my opinion, it's going to backfire. It's going to result in an increase in public perception against entities like the NRA. It's always been my experience that whenever you start taking an extreme position, you alienate more people than you would if you took some sort of compromising position, even if the compromise is illusory or minuscule or de minimis. And I think it's I think it's a little offensive to say that, you know, after 20 six-year-old children get gunned down in a kindergarten, that suddenly we need armed guards for kindergartens. What about movie theaters? What about shopping malls? What about all the other places where people have been gunned down? The death of the children only calls attention to the issue, but it's not just the little children who need protection. Everybody needs protection, and that's the problem. The protection is needed everywhere. And, of course, it's very easy to say put armed guards everywhere when you have something to gain by supplying them with firearms and ammunition. And, of course, you expect the taxpayers to pay for it because that's their job. You know, you sell them the guns that put people at risk, and then they've got to pay for the extra security measures that are necessary to suddenly protect everybody from those guns. It's a classic case of trying to treat a symptom rather than try to address the cause of the illness. And the cause of the illness, among other things, is the lack of any control over who can buy firearms and who can own them, including but not limited to military assault weapons. And when the nation moved away from the ban against private ownership of military assault weapons approximately, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, that's when the violence started to rise. And it doesn't take a...
Go ahead. What, Peter, hold on, because I want to talk about some of these items in detail.
But I'd
like to get, you know, John's initial thoughts on Friday's interesting NRA press conference. What did you think about it, John?
Well, I thought he just articulated what Sam suggested last week and I seconded as far as the security at schools. I did find it pretty funny that Peter's concerned about the taxpayers. I think the cost of one day of interest on the national debt would probably amount to more than it would cost to protect all our kids nationwide.
Okay, but John, you know, take your blinkers off just for a second. What Peter said was important. You know, I think most people were expecting some sort of conciliatory stance from the NRA. For example, I think they had room to concede that semi-automatic weapons and large clips of ammo, you know, things that hold 30 bullets, 100 bullets, really have no place in someone's household collection. Don't you agree with that?
Generally speaking, Simon, sure.
Generally speaking.
Well, there probably are some reasons to own that, but I can't think of any. I'm not going to make a blanket statement, but generally speaking, yeah.
You know, in my opinion, military style weapons require specialized skill, specialized abilities to handle them, and they shouldn't just be in the hands of people who, quite frankly, aren't really competent to wield them and handle them and manage them. And they're designed to kill large numbers of people. They're designed for war. And I have a real problem with private citizens having unlimited access to these kinds of weapons. It's a recipe ripe for disaster. Now, there may be some private citizens out there who are competent and understand and respect these weapons and can handle them and also keep them safely. In other words, keep them out of the hands of people who would abuse them, such as, for example, Mrs. Lanza in this most recent incident. But I just think that the risk of having these types of arms flood everyone's homes is just too ripe for disaster, as recent events have suggested and the history of events have suggested in the last 5 or 6 years.
So, John, would you have any a big objection if the NRA, you know, were to say, look, you know, we've given this some thought, and, you know, military-style semi-automatic weapons, large clips, you know, have no place in regular society, you know, we would back a ban?
I don't know, Simon. They'd have to canvass their members and find out what they're thinking and come up for reasons to dispute that, if there are any. But I'm sure they're doing their research, and they definitely shouldn't cede the moral high ground to the opposition, because they're naturally concerned about the slippery slope. And you look at high crime areas, and they have the strongest gun legislation laws, and it's not effective. You got to have a comprehensive program and deal with the problem, not just make liberals feel good and nothing solved.
Okay. I think I've heard this argument before, but, you know, statistics show that, you know, gun regulation works. You know, look at the number of gun deaths in the U.S. as compared to the U.K., Australia, Canada, and the absolute best one is Japan, where they have like one.
Australia is a very good case study, because, what was it, about a decade or so, or 15 years ago, they had a massacre just like we had. And they took action, and the government instituted a program to prevent military assault weapons from being disseminated in the public, and they bought back a lot of guns from people. Surprise, surprise, the number of gun fatalities went down. What a shock.
Yeah, it dropped by 59%.
Who would have ever imagined such a result? It's so mind-boggling to think that would have happened. Wow.
John, sorry, I interrupted you. But
I interrupted.
why don't you guys just say what the program was? It was forced confiscation. If you want to call for that, do it. I don't think it would be effective in this country, but that's what
I call for it. I call for it. It's not going to happen. I can't do it. I'm just a guy with an opinion, but I certainly call for it without a doubt. No doubt.
That's the way it would be effective, confiscation.
Yeah, and your approach is, no, don't do that. Just put armed guards everywhere.
No. Confiscation is the wrong word. I think the technical term is eminent domain.
Yeah, it's eminent domain. It's purchase. You're purchasing them.
Right. No one's losing. I don't know if you're a hunter. Well, at least of animals. I know you're a hunter of people. But you don't need a semi-automatic weapon to go shoot grouse.
Simon, let me try to condense this. I'll tell you the difference as I see it. It's a philosophical difference. And I only have to think back 30 years. It's reminiscent of the nuclear freeze movement. I don't know, you guys might have been a part of it. I certainly wasn't. But most of the Democrats, including John Kerry, our soon-to-be Secretary of State, they promoted this in the 80s. And they argued that nuclear weapons were bad and must be eliminated at all costs, even if that included unilateral disarmament. Reasoning that the Soviets would follow suit because it was such a grand gesture in good faith. I believe, like nuclear weapons, firearms, and any weapon, they're neutral, inanimate objects. They're capable of being used productively for a good cause or, by contrast, for evil purposes, depending on who's in possession of them at the time. I don't see guns as bad. I see the people who use them as bad or good. It depends on the individual.
This is the guns don't kill people. People kill people.
They do, but sometimes it's a good cause. How do you think the concentration camps were liberated, Simon, with guns?
Hey, John, do you really believe that guns are comparable to nuclear weapons? Just, do you really believe that?
Peter, I'm making a philosophical argument. I'm talking about the way of thinking.
I don't know what you're saying. Are guns comparable to nuclear weapons or not?
No, I'm drawing an analogy that some people think nuclear weapons are bad, and just like they do guns, and
I can't think of many good uses for nuclear weapons other than killing massive amounts of people. That's about it.
Well, it had to do with.
How do you feel about certain people in the world with access to nuclear weapons? How would you feel if Osama bin Laden had an access to a nuclear weapon? How would you feel about that?
I wouldn't. But what I'm saying is, you guys don't.
You wouldn't feel good, or you wouldn't feel.
I wouldn't feel good about it at all. And
feel good about it either, because that would be putting a very dangerous weapon in the hands of someone who has no business having it, because he's got no good purpose in mind. But leaving that aside, nobody's talking about eliminating guns. You're talking about eliminating nuclear weapons. And you can't put a genie back in a bottle. Nobody's going to get rid of a nuclear capability that people worked very hard to create, and all with a very good purpose in mind. But nobody's talking about getting rid of guns. We're talking about taking military assault weapons out of the hands of the general public, for which they were never intended, and it's a dangerous mix. What's wrong with that?
I think a lot of people, like you guys, do want to confiscate all guns.
No.
But, you don't make a point by just calling it confiscation. You know, we've defined what it is. But what's wrong with getting military weapons out of the hands of people who clearly have no business having them?
And also lawful citizens who are absolutely no threat and needed for defense.
Well, like Mrs. Lanza, like she was a good law-abiding citizen. She was a good woman. And
I'm
she
talking
was an
about
advocate.
The other people you never hear about.
All we hear about are people getting their hands on these things and killing lots of people with them. It's just crazy. The reason this debate is so crazy is because I know what the NRA is doing. They're doing just what you said, John. They're not going to sacrifice the moral high ground, because their negotiating tactic is don't give an inch. Even if the other side is right, even if that's correct, even if we know they're wrong, we're just not going to give an inch. That's our negotiating style. I mean,
because you're not right.
Okay, well, so you agree with me that that's the thing. You're just not going to give an inch, even if it's crazy to let military weapons in the hands of private citizens. You're not going to give an inch on it.
I'm not saying don't give an inch. I'm saying negotiate in good faith, but it has to be on both sides, and it's always one-sided.
Let's negotiate it. Let's pretend that we're negotiating a resolution
for
this issue.
For the NRA, I am a member, but I'm only speaking for myself, just so people
I know.
Are aware
let's
of that.
Pretend we're going to negotiate a resolution to this. Let's just pretend. I say no more military assault weapons to other than military personnel and law enforcement personnel and people who go through very specialized training to have access to these weapons and very specialized screening. That's my opening thought. That's the opening memo. Let's work on it. What do you say in response to that?
I say that sounds reasonable.
Okay, well, there's the end of the debate.
Not really, because then I would say to you, why can't lawful citizens keep handguns in their homes in Chicago?
Well, we're not talking about handguns in their homes in Chicago. We're talking about military assault weapons.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Let's have a comprehensive discussion, not just what you want to outlaw.
Well, I don't think – well, okay, fine. You can call it whatever you want. We've talked about military assault weapons. We seem to have a general agreement on that. Apparently the NRA doesn't agree. They don't agree with what you just said. They say, no, that's ridiculous. No restrictions on guns at all, which is what we've had for the last 5 or 6 years, and in my opinion, it's not working.
But
now, you raised the issue of handguns in your home. That's your next area. You want to discuss that. Generally speaking, I don't know what we can do about handguns in the home, and I don't really know what can be done to prevent people from owning handguns in the home. I personally think people need to have some measure of training in firearms, just like they have to have some measure of training to drive a car. But generally speaking, I don't see any way to limit or control the possession of ordinary handguns in homes. Now, that is a question about what constitutes an ordinary handgun. I have a funny feeling. I think of a handgun, again, you know, I'm not a gun expert. I think of a snub-nosed 38 caliber revolver. That's my idea of an ordinary handgun. But I have a funny feeling there are some people who think of a handgun as something that nevertheless loads up a 50-bullet magazine, and they hold it in the palm of their hand, and it rapid-fires bullets. I mean, I don't know. Is that right?
No, I wouldn't classify that as a handgun. Maybe an Uzi.
Okay, well, an Uzi. Is an Uzi a handgun?
it's a hybrid. No, but it's small and compact.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Come on. An Uzi isn't a handgun.
Okay, well, see, you know, I think there are people who would take the position that an Uzi is a handgun. I mean, you know, well, you said I could own a handgun. Well, here it is. You know, that's my concern.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think, you know, you're a reasonable person, John. I don't think you think of an Uzi as a handgun, but I think
That's what I'm saying. But you would make the case that you think other people would make that argument. I don't think so. To me, a handgun is either a semi-automatic or a revolver with up to maybe 16 rounds capacity for a semi-automatic, and a revolver is usually 6 rounds.
Let me ask you a question, John. What exactly does semi-automatic mean? What exactly does that mean?
That means the first bullet would be like you need as much force exerted to squeeze the trigger as a revolver. It takes some force. After that, unless you put it back on safe, you barely have to touch the trigger and the next bullet can be squeezed off.
So you can do it. You can do it pretty quickly.
That's what they mean. Automatic's just fully automatic. You barely have to touch it. Semi-automatic, your first round requires a lot more pressure to squeeze the trigger than the rest of the clip, which is going to be an automatic then. And you could breathe on it, and it'll go off.
And for a handgun, what you and I would consider a handgun, what's sort of the maximum number of rounds typically in a clip?
16 or I think they also have 8 and 10.
Well, I'm curious. You know, you're ex-law enforcement. I mean, how did you feel about many people possessing these guns? Did it ever make you feel unsafe going into any kind of situation? And when you were, you know, out there going into homes and going into places, did you ever wish that, you know, that you wouldn't have to encounter these kinds of weapons or that people didn't have as easy access to them as they do?
Not at all. A handgun in the hands of law-abiding citizens didn't threaten me at all. As a matter of fact, I support it. Crooks, yeah, of course, but they're not going to follow the law anyway. So what difference does it make? You got to assume they're armed.
Well, the problem is, you know, like for instance, leaving aside the automatic military weapon issue, I mean, these guys, you know, I keep focusing on the guy in Colorado and the guy in Connecticut. They were law-abiding citizens. I mean, everybody's law-abiding a citizen until they break the law. And that
remains to be seen. I don't know if they were or not. They certainly had some mental issues.
Oh, sure. That's a big problem. That's one of my big concerns. We have a very high-pressure, high-stress world, and a lot of people have a lot of mental problems. And that's one of my biggest concerns is, you know, these people who have mental problems are out there everywhere, and you never know what they're capable of doing or when. Obviously, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The NRA mentioned this on Friday. You know, mental health was a big concern, but did you notice that they offered absolutely nothing in the way of helping address the issue? I mean, is there a way to address it?
Well, Simon, let me ask you guys. Do you think by confiscating all the weapons from law-abiding citizens, people are going to be safer?
Yeah,
the crooks are going to turn in their weapons.
There's no doubt in my mind I think people would be safer, but I'm not talking about confiscating all the weapons from everyone. I'm talking about getting military weapons.
Citizens would surrender them.
Pardon me?
Only law-abiding citizens would surrender their weapons. They'd be of no threat to you.
Any weapon registered would be subject to eminent domain. Now, let's remember that term, John. It's not confiscation.
Well, you can call it eminent domain. John's going to call it confiscation.
I remember
because
that
he
with Al Davis and the Raiders.
Yeah, you're going to call it confiscation because it's against your will.
No, that's what
look,
it is.
You know what? My heart bleeds for you. I'm sorry. These military weapons, they belong in the hands of trained military personnel. They're not intended for private consumption. That's my opinion. And yeah, I stick to it. And I don't feel sorry for anybody who's got to give up their AK-47 with the 800-pound banana clip.
What about just the common handgun used for protection in the house?
I think we've covered that. I think that's not applicable to this. I think we're never going to get the military weapons out of these people's hands. I'm just trying to get military weapons out of the hands of non-military personnel. That's
I don't believe you and Simon are going to be satisfied with that step.
Well, maybe not, but it's a first step. You know, you're not going to even give us the first step.
No, because you could see why people are suspicious of your motives and your ultimate goals.
Look,
this
is what existed in the country prior to about 6 or 7 years ago. There was a general ban on public access to military weapons, and then you got your way. You got your Christmas presents. Oh, goody, goody, goody. We get to have all our military weapons. And this is what happened. This is the world you created. This is the world you created. This is what it leads to. It leads to kids getting butchered in kindergarten. You got what you wanted.
No, I didn't sign up for this. You guys.
Well, you didn't sign up for this result, but when you support everybody's right to have these weapons, this is what it leads to. For
you
all
guys
the reasons
signed up for this
about.
By not having security at schools to protect kids.
Well, why stop at schools? Why not security everywhere? Why schools? Why not everywhere?
I'm not opposed to that.
Okay, well, that's a big issue and a big change in the way we live. It sounds a lot like communist Russia to me. Oh, look, there's our armed guards.
No, because citizens would have weapons, not the government.
Citizens would have weapons. I just want to explore that. So your concept is what exactly? We have private citizens stationed as armed guards everywhere?
We have that now at all government buildings, pretty much. The politicians are protected.
Okay, so you propose, for instance, let's just start with schools, but, you know, every public gathering place, as we've seen, is susceptible to this. Shopping malls, movie theaters.
I'm not promoting anything. I think it's a personal decision based on the owner of the property.
Okay, so the owner of the property should decide. You know, we talked with Sam a week ago, and he implements what I think is a pretty effective screening device. It doesn't involve armed force at all, although I know he's packing. But that's a different situation. You know, a bar or a restaurant like that, you know, people want to go in there, and you can screen them at the door. But you know, for instance, schools, let's just walk it through. How would that work? So you got a kindergarten, you got what, I don't know, 500 kids there? I don't even know. How many kids are in a typical kindergarten? What's kindergarten, K through 6? I don't know. Let's say you have 500 kids. You've got, a quarter acre? Is that what it is? You got those little chain link fences around it? So, I mean, I just want to talk it through logistically. How does it work? How many guards?
To anything you want as far as the scenario, Peter. Cut to the chase.
Well, you tell me. Who's there? What weapon?
Whatever you want to say, and then I'll give you my argument.
Give it to me now. How does it work? Walk me through it.
I'll help you on this one, John. The NRA suggested that there be an armed policeman in every school. And it could be supplemented by local vigilantes patrolling the area, again armed. Wow, this sounds great. Is that where you want your, you know, six-year-old to be?
I would want my six-year-old protected when he's at school, Simon.
And yeah. The answer is more guns.
I think guns have to be in the hands of good guys, not just bad guys.
I couldn't agree with you more, but we can't do it. We can't stop them from getting into the hands of the bad guys.
That's my point. Why do you want to stop them from getting in the hands of the good guys?
John, hold on. All right, I'm with Peter on this. There's nothing wrong.
I figured you would be.
there's nothing wrong with someone with mental competence having a handgun, all right, for home protection. I'm not so keen on the idea of the handgun being semi-automatic, but you know, you want a gun, have a gun. What I'm against are the assault-style, you know, weapons that are available that are absolute knockoffs of the military weapons that are used to kill lots and lots of people. I mean, it's stupid.
Well, I think John agrees with that. You've said you agree with that, John, right?
Yeah, before this shooting, I said I agreed with you guys as far as assault weapons.
Well, you know, all I could say is I think John, probably a lot of members of the NRA, and there's nothing wrong, obviously, with being a member of the NRA. It actually shows that you treat firearms with respect, and you want to understand them and get as much knowledge and information as you can about them. I just don't understand the political stance that's just been taken. But John, you've shed light on it, which is, you know, we're not giving an inch, because if we give an inch now, you're going to want more later. So I don't negotiate like that. I'm a lawyer, and I go up against people all the time who negotiate like that. And I just don't do it. It's not my forte. I get to where I want to go as quickly as I possible, and everyone tells me, well, that's a crazy way to negotiate. That's stupid.
Don't you think Mayor Bloomberg negotiates like that?
Well, you know, you're saying, fine, don't negotiate. That's the way we want to negotiate, and who cares how many people die while we continue to take this stance? That's what the NRA is saying.
No, Peter, I want to save lives. That's why I want security at school.
You want to save lives, but the NRA doesn't, you know.
No,
they do.
That's their point. I guess you guys are saying just leave the kids there unprotected, and I can't agree to that.
Well, fine, don't agree with it. Then go find your local kindergarten and go keep watch. Go ahead. You make it safe. You're the guy who understands guns. You're the NRA member. You're the one who wants to have private citizens safe. You want to keep kids safe. Go. You go protect them.
Well,
and,
I
know,
would be
glad. Who's going to protect the shopping malls and the movie theaters and all of that? But, you know, go ahead. Nobody's stopping you.
I would be glad to do that if you would work pro bono for people who need your services.
You would be amazed at how much pro bono work I do for people who need my services.
But you still
you know,
make
there
a
you
living.
Go. There you go. You want the dangerous condition to continue to exist, but you yourself don't want to be responsible for providing the security. You think someone else should provide the security.
I'll be glad to do it as long as I'm paid.
Okay, well, there you go. You want to get paid? Fair enough. So we're back to logistics, and I don't fault you for wanting to get paid. You're a very valuable service. You're protecting our youth. But, you know, you've got to get compensated. And by the way, you know, you can't work every single day of the week, so we've got to find somebody else. You know, I assume you guys should work in pairs. I think that's probably appropriate. You should be paid an appropriate amount of money. And obviously, you know, it's a small expense for all the taxpayers, but we should do it, notwithstanding the fact that we could implement, you know, we could implement preventative measures, measures which would keep military assault weapons out of the hands of these people in the first place. And by the way, you know, if a guy wants to sneak up on a kindergarten and he's got military assault weapons with scopes and all of that, and you guys are sitting there talking and just sharing a quiet moment, I'm not convinced he couldn't just take you out. I mean, no offense intended, but, you know, he's got an advantage. He knows when he's going to attack. You don't know when he's going to attack. And most of the time, you know, you can't be perpetually vigilant expecting a sniper to come get you. So I don't really think that solution is all that workable, despite the fact that it sounds great. It sounds like a great soundbite. Ooh, it's not guns. Get more security in schools. I'm just not convinced that's all that workable as long as the dangerous condition continues to exist.
Uh-oh. I think John's gone for a Snickers.
I don't blame him. I'm ranting, and I apologize.
You know what I feel like?
What's that?
Where were those I used to eat? Those marshmallow pies. What were they called?
Oh, Lord, I have
wait,
no
clue. Wait, the pink ones?
No, they were brown.
Oh, marshmallow pies. Are you sure poor John is taking it?
Would that be moon pies? Or?
That's like a moon pie. I forget the name of them. I'll think of it.
Oh, okay. All right. Back to the more serious thing. This whole mental health issue. I mean, Wayne's World on Friday, you know, made big of mental health issues. John, do you have any clue as to how the NRA could contribute to, you know, keep these mentally unstable people out of guns?
How's that the NRA's responsibility, Simon? They're not in elective office.
They're the ones that offered it up as a problem.
Just saying it needs to be evaluated, but they can't affect any legislation.
Okay.
Why don't you
they can't affect any legislation.
Well, they can't pass legislation, but they can certainly impact it. And
they can lobby, but they can't pass legislation. That's up to the people in office.
Well,
they're very powerful
John, lobby. They have influence.
It's called money.
And by the way, John, I do sympathize with you. I know this is crazy, but I actually appeared on that Hardball TV show once, and I had that guy. What was his name? Matthews. And he decided that he wanted to call up some Harvard law professor, some woman. And they both screamed and yelled at me for the entire 10-minute time that I was on the show trying to justify my position. It's crazy. And I apologize. You are getting ganged up on here a little bit.
I don't mind, really.
It's actually kind of fun, isn't it? I mean, it's better to be, you know, in a show like this, it's better to be ganged up on than to be the dog pile, because it's more exciting to be the, you know, the guy going up against the masses. I think it's almost impossible to screen for mental illness and guns. I don't see how that works. I mean, it sounds like some concept that's enunciated and it sounds good. It's a nice soundbite. I don't see how on earth you implement it. I just don't see. I don't see any feasible way to do it.
Oh, okay.
There is. It's called interactive involvement among people. If, like, from what I understand, this the mother was considering having her son committed, and that's what set him off.
Well, I'm glad you talk about the mother. I assume you talked about Mrs. Lanza.
Yeah, and by the way, my sympathy goes out to her too. I'm sure she went through hell. And I don't want to demonize her, and I hope you guys don't.
Well, you know, I have to address that. I my sympathy goes out to her and her family as well. But there's a part of me that's a little bit angry with her, and I can't help that.
Mm-hmm.
She raised her son. She, more than any other human being on Earth, knew him probably better than anyone. if anyone was aware of whatever kind of issues he had, she was. And I don't fault her for having a troubled son. Everybody's got troubles.
Right.
And we all have our crosses to bear. But she then, with full knowledge of whatever it is her son was, she then proceeded to gather together a small arsenal of weapons. And she obviously didn't prevent him access to these weapons. And, there are a lot of unanswered questions there. And when I hear about a son...
You don't know that, Peter. He could have...
Well, what don't I know? Tell me what facts I don't know. He got the weapons. They were her weapons.
She could have secured them, and he found a way to access them. We don't know.
Well, then they weren't secured sufficiently.
Well, I don't know. I can't say that.
I know. It's a fact. It's an absolute, uncontroverted fact. They were her weapons, and he used them. I mean, there's a fact. It's indisputable.
Okay, folks.
But, I have
a question for both of you. We have a caller. I don't know if it's naughty or nice, or if it's Santa Claus or what. Would you be prepared to take a caller?
Of course, Simon. Let's hear from the street.
Okay, caller from the 904 area code. What's your name, and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, my name is Robert, and I'd like to discuss the Second Amendment and what it actually means here. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it reads that we should all have any kind of military weapon, and all of them, you know? I mean, it's a terrible tragedy what happened in Connecticut, my home state, by the way. And my daughter actually lived right across from the school. My grandson would have been attending it had they not moved away. But anyway, you know, think about the fact that probably more than 20 kids a week are being killed in Afghanistan by our drones and our troops, you know, and no one's crying about them, you know. I know it's a sad situation, and I do believe that there should be armed security guards in schools. They don't have to display their weapons, you know. They could be dressed in suits with shoulder harnesses. But the only way you're going to combat...
Let me guess. They'd have earpieces and dark glasses.
No, not necessarily. But still, how else are you going to protect them? You know, it's
What's wrong with just taking the really evil semi-automatic military-style weapons out of the mix?
What's wrong with that is the Second Amendment is there to protect us from tyranny, you know, and protect us from our own government. The problem is a societal problem. The NRA is right. You know, I mean, we turned the people out of the mental institutions years ago. I think it was the Reagan administration that did that. You know, mental health programs aren't available for people. You know, our society is permeated with violence, you know, everywhere you look. And our own military and our fist, boom, bah, rah, 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 you're with me or again me attitude you know, taking over the world sucks completely, you know.
Hey, Robert, what does the Second Amendment say? What are the words to the Second Amendment?
It says a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state and the right to bear arms shall not be infringed.
Oh, okay, Robert, you have just said it all. I mean... It's not about toting AK-47s. It's about the right of a state to have a well-organized militia, not a bunch of whack jobs with AK-47s.
Oh, But that's what the word militia has become to be known as, you know, basically a bunch of deluded Christian white supremacists, you know, that band together. A militia, there are actually two definitions that I looked up, and one is a civilian, basically, with military training that's not connected to the regular army.
Okay. What's the other definition?
Well, geez, I'm going to have to look at it again. It was more.
Well, look. Let me just offer some of my own opinions here. You can't just disregard, in my opinion, the phrase that begins the Second Amendment: a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. It's you can't just toss that away. And, you know, one definition of militia, the one you just referred to, is certainly an accepted definition of militia. It's an organization of, ordinary citizens or non-military citizens for the purpose of achieving, order, justice, peace, whatever you want to call it. This amendment was written at a time when ordinary citizens were trying to settle an untamed country, and they frequently had to defend themselves from attacks from native North Americans or other threats. And the reference, in my opinion, to a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state refers to a state's ability to maintain some type of military order or control when those times are necessary. And I think that it's utterly incomprehensible to extend that amendment to the modern world and say, well, every single human being gets to own military hardware because that's how we maintain a free state. To me, that's actually the opposite of what the amendment intends. That creates anarchy. That creates disorder. That creates non-regulation. That creates a threat to the freedom of a state because no one's free when everybody's walking around carrying a gun, in my opinion.
Hold on. I want to get John's opinion.
Well, Simon, I think I said a week or two ago. By the way, Robert, thanks for your opinions. Obviously, you're a well-informed individual. I would say, like I said a couple weeks ago, there's a distinction to me between citizenry and an obligation and a duty to protect yourself and your community and the government. I don't think, Peter, they're talking about militia being part of the army or the government. They're free individual citizens. And also I would remind people that the Second Amendment protects all your other rights and the other amendments. Without the Second Amendment, all the other amendments aren't worth the paper they're written on.
Because that's not true. Give me another amendment that's not worth anything without the Second Amendment.
Because what's going to guarantee those rights, Peter?
So you're telling me that the fact that Adam Lanza had an AK-47 guarantees my right to have any religion I want or have any speech I want?
To some extent, it does. And if you put it in
tell it to the 26 people who are now dead. They don't have any more rights because of that.
It's not because
those
of
rights
that.
Were taken away from them.
Because they weren't protected.
It to the 1.5 million innocent citizens in Afghanistan.
Look, there's no doubt that the issues in Afghanistan are horrible any way you look at them. And you can talk about those all you want, but that's a separate issue. And
well,
that's separate and distinct from the United States Constitution and the interpretation of the Second Amendment.
All right. Well, the First Amendment has already been destroyed when you have free speech zones and dissent is frowned upon, and people are being jailed for it.
You know, I'm glad you raised the First Amendment because I think it's instructive here. The First Amendment, it deals with freedom of speech, freedom of religion, separation of church and state, et cetera, et cetera. It is the First Amendment because it is one of the major cornerstones of a democracy, the right to freely express yourself, the right to have an opinion, the right to worship in any religion that you choose. But I can also tell you that the First Amendment is not absolute. There are exceptions to First Amendment rights.
Right.
You don't always have the right to worship in any kind of religion or religious way you want if to do so would infringe upon the rights of others. You know, there are people who are satanic followers in this country. There are people who want to engage in human sacrifice. There are people who want to sacrifice animals. There are people who want to engage in some type of drug use associated with their religion. The Constitution doesn't give them an unfettered right to worship in any way they want. And the same thing is true with freedom of speech. You know, people just don't have an unlimited, unfettered freedom of speech. They just don't have the right to say anything they want. Sometimes they can be sued for what they say. Sometimes what they say can be deemed hateful or constitute a public nuisance, and the government has the right to, under appropriate circumstances, restrict it or regulate it. There's a whole body of doctrine called time, place, and manner. The point is that even a right as seemingly sacred as the First Amendment is not absolute. Well, why shouldn't every amendment be treated the same way? It's not absolute right. They have to be subjected to rules of reason.
Well, and being an attorney, of course, you realize that it's all in the interpretation. And the key to the Second Amendment is well regulated as far as militia is concerned.
Well,
and
that's very interesting.
Come on. Robert, be reasonable. You know, this document was written, 200 years ago? Times have changed. The founding fathers created what they felt was a comprehensive document at the time. But for us to, you know, reinterpret it 200 years later and, you know, decide that the Second Amendment, you know, involves AK-47s is stupid.
Well, like I said, I think the well-regulated militia should have drones and tanks and the works.
What do you make of the term well-regulated? What's your interpretation of that phrase?
Well, that's pretty interesting. It certainly isn't, you know, a band of religiously deluded white supremacists.
I agree with you. I agree with you. That's one of my concerns, too.
The interesting second definition of militia is the entire body of physically fit civilians eligible by law for military service. Now, yes, you know, so Simon, you're saying that basically we should just throw out the Constitution because it's a 200-year-old document. Well,
Personally, I think we should throw out the Second Amendment because I think it is an appendix on the body politic. I think it has no application to the world we live into today. I really do. I study it more and more. I've been reading case opinions on it, and I don't think it has any bearing on the world we live in today. I think the states have ample military capability today in the form of all manner of law enforcement, National Guard, reserves, etc. I think this was written for a day, an age, an era, a time that has long passed, and it has no application to the world we live in today. I think it's like a human appendix. It served a need once. It's just grossly outdated now. And all people do is seize upon the last phrase, and every time we have a discussion about linking it with the first phrase, it just dissolves into ambiguity. Nobody knows what to make of this nonsense about state militia well-regulated. Nobody can answer these questions.
Right. Well, it's kind of interesting. I thought, like, I'd really like to find a 200-year-old dictionary, you know.
Well, there are 200-year-old dictionaries, and I did some research on that. It's very fascinating. There are documents that emerged out of, you know, they're 200 years old. They're contemporary. These documents exist. Virginia legislature had a document that was passed at or about the same time as this, and it defined terms like militia. And, you know, this is our best dictionary to go back in time and interpret what these phrases mean. And any way you slice it, it it comes down to you said you offered a definition a while ago that was very interesting. You said all able-bodied citizens, all citizens also who are eligible to serve in the military. In other words, that's it starts off with this big grandiose definition, but it comes down to something very small and narrow at the end. It's talking about able-bodied people who are eligible to serve in the military. That's that's actually a much narrower definition than it begins. It talks about military service. It talks about law and order. It talks about maintaining security in a free state. I believe states have ample ability to provide their own military services now. We don't need to call up citizens. Militia, the whole concept of a citizen militia is just non-existent these days. They're called vigilantes.
John,
right, unfortunately.
Hold on. I need to tear John away from his Snickers bar.
Simon, it was a scooter pie.
Okay. All right.
Why not a Twinkie?
Well, they're a dying breed, but you got a good point there, my friend. You really do. But God bless those Twinkies.
Oh, wait, John. The Twinkie defense.
John.
Very good. We talked about the Twinkie defense. That's a good one.
John, I want your thoughts on where this conversation is and is leading.
I don't think I'd want to be around Robert's bunker with those drones. But... I would say this is what concerns us
right now, and I'm actually like a pretty liberal hippie in many ways, but I also have some strong conservative beliefs. But the point is, if they take away our guns, we're subjugated to a tyrannical corporatocracy, which is what's happening now.
Okay, hold on. Let John say his piece.
All right.
I lost my train of thought there, Simon.
Well, it's all that GMO food you eat.
All right, let's see. This is what concerns us on the libertarian side of the aisle, Peter's comments about he doesn't think the Second Amendment's applicable anymore in today's modern world. Why not just say the entire Constitution? Who is Peter to decide what's applicable and what's not?
Well, I'm nobody to decide the issue. I'm expressing an opinion. And I'm telling you, in my opinion, the Second Amendment is absurd these days.
I would rather be guided by the Constitution than your or anyone else's considered opinion.
Well,
that's fine.
But the problem with that, John, is that when I offer you a constitutional interpretation of the Second Amendment, you just disagree with it to suit your own needs, which is you don't care what anybody has to say about interpreting the Second Amendment. All you care about is whether or not you get to have your rights to guns. So
I'm saying,
darned
saying
if I do, darned if I don't.
I'm saying you're interpreting it incorrectly.
Well, okay, fine. You're more qualified to interpret it than I am. Go ahead. Knock yourself out. You tell me what it means.
I told you, look at the analyzing the concept of citizen militias, I think, a couple of weeks ago.
John, in plain and simple English that everyone can understand, you tell me what the Second Amendment means.
We went over this like a couple of weeks ago.
It shouldn't be too hard to just answer the question. Tell me what it means.
All right, John, I'm going to cut to the chase. The mere word militia indicates more than one. All right, I'm pretty good at... understanding, English. So, Adam Lanza, was he a militia?
No.
So organized militia. He certainly wasn't a militia, but he was a mentally ill person that probably couldn't get the help that he needed because of the way the system is set up, because he sat at home and played violent video games. Listen, I would really like to see a world with no weapons and no wars. I would love that. But, it ain't going to happen. So, we have a right to protect ourselves, specifically from the government. And if there's some collateral damage, it's a sad thing. But like I said, look at the wars. Nobody's putting up a big fuss about that. There are a few people.
Well, I'm pretty sure that when the Founding Fathers drafted the Second Amendment, they weren't ensuring the right of the people to rise up against the federal government with guns. I'm fairly certain that was not their intent. Otherwise, when the states of the South said, "Hey, we don't want to be a part of this," the government would have said, "Well, that's your right. Good luck. Have a nice day. Goodbye."
You guys are letting John get off the hook. John, you agree. You're a well-read guy.
Oh, thanks, man.
Militia tends to mean more than one.
You mean like media?
I want to broach the media subject, but skate on the subject, would you agree that the word militia means more than one?
All right, Simon, lead me into the quicksand, please.
All right. In your many years of reading, would you agree that the word militia means more than a single person?
As opposed to militias where there's different militias, you're saying?
But like a militia of one. Like,
oh,
you know, you could constitute a one-man army, John.
You could, yeah.
Well, I think you could, too. There's no doubt about it.
Is that what the Second Amendment
is trying to protect?
John, you wouldn't be called a militia, would you?
I think it's somewhat subjective, Simon. If you're getting me to say it's objective, no. I agree with Peter. You could be an army of one.
All right, but you wouldn't be called a militia.
No, you'd be called Rambo.
Yeah, that's right. You'd be called Rambo or lunatic, or you'd be called that guy in Colorado who ordered an army on the internet and then walked in as an army of one into Aurora, Colorado, and opened fire. He was an army of one.
Right.
All right, but he wasn't a militia.
Well, let's put it this way. He wasn't a militia that was necessary to the security of a free state. Quite the contrary. He was a militia that threatened the security of a free state. You had law-abiding citizens sitting there like fish in a barrel while some guy with military assault weapons just opened up on them.
Okay,
intended to help the security of a free state at all. That threatens the security of a free state.
Okay, John. Rant on.
Simon, I wiggled out of that one pretty effectively.
You wiggled, all right. You still haven't defined the Second Amendment, but that answers the question. It's not susceptible to any kind of definition that anyone who's in favor of unlimited gun access wants to embrace. You have to deal with the words on the page, and they're very problematic.
Okay, then, Peter, can you define to ensure the security of a free state?
I think in 1789, when that was written, if you wanted, as the state of Virginia or the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, if you had to defend against an uprising of Native North Americans, you could call in your people because that was the extent of firearms back then. They were muskets.
Well,
you called in your people and you defended yourself. That's a militia.
Well, then they would say defense.
They said security of a free state. So, you know,
right.
You can call it defense. You can call it offense. You can go attack the people you think are going to attack you, but that's necessary for the ability of those people to maintain freedom and security. That's necessary for the state. Now, that concept is directly contradicted by the notion that guys like Adam Lanza and that guy in Colorado should have the ability to arm themselves to the teeth and go walking around and shoot everybody to bits. I think it's outdated. I think it's gone. It's an appendix. It's crazy. The state doesn't say, let's get a posse together and go after that guy. We need to get a posse together to deal with this. We've got all this stuff at our disposal now. The state doesn't need this.
I
look at the Constitution, and I like it. It's a good framework. But nowhere in it does it say that, for all of your hard work, we're going to pay you gazillions of dollars every year. I can't remember the number.
I am glad you said that. I'm very glad. That reminds me of another issue. Just because a right is not a constitutional right doesn't mean it's not a right. And that's part of what supports my position on this. You could have the right to keep and bear firearms. Every state would have the ability to regulate that right, to put reasonable restrictions on it. But it wouldn't be a constitutional right. I don't think it is a constitutional right. Now, you mentioned the right to earn $1 million. That's called the right to earn a living. That's called the right to work. It might surprise people to know the right to work is not a constitutional right. You don't have a fundamental constitutional right to work. You have a right to work, but it's not a constitutional right.
Right. But, I mean, look at how much money we pay our senators, our representatives, our president, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I don't have the data in front of me, but the average senator not only makes a pretty tidy living, but he gets something like $1 million a year in discretionary spending for travel, whatever else, employing staff. I mean, that was not the way the framers put it.
Well, that's an interesting point. Were the original legislators unpaid?
Yes, indeed they were.
Right.
Well, they were also all more or less independently wealthy, but we'll leave that aside.
Well, it's my understanding too that if someone even serves a day or two, that they're entitled to their pay for the rest of their life as well. Is that not true?
It depends on what you're talking about. I'm not aware of that per se. I'm not saying that's not true, but I'm not aware of that. And it depends on what position you're talking about. I worked on Capitol Hill for 2 years in Washington, D.C. I was a legislative assistant. I worked there for 2 years. When I left, my pay stopped. So, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't believe that members of the House of Representatives and members of the Senate continue to be paid after they leave office. I do believe that the President of the United States, after he leaves office, does continue to receive, I don't know what you'd call it, a pension or salary or something. I do know that federal judges have lifetime appointments, so obviously they get paid for life, and they probably get paid something after they retire. But I personally don't think, and I don't know for certain, that members of Congress, after they leave office, are entitled to get paid for life.
There is a pension plan.
There may be a pension plan. They may be able to retire and collect a pension. And that may be a big, fat perk, and that may be how they get around that. They call it a pension.
Right. But, the point is that's not mentioned in the Constitution. It was a sacrifice that people had to make to be in, quote, government, not a perk.
Well, I think that's a good point. I wish I had my copy of the Constitution with me. I left it in my office because I would really like to start looking at the various articles. What you're talking about is established in different articles of the Constitution.
Pull it up on your computer.
Well, let me see if I can do that because God knows I love reading the Constitution. I really do. It never ceases to amaze me every time I read it.
Well, and you have a great point, Simon. It should be a willingness to serve for the betterment of society, not a high-paying job, you know, that is supported by the corporatocracy.
I mean, I think that's a noble idea. I'm just not sure how viable it is in the world in which we live. And, you know, it's probably a moot point anyway, but in theory, only those who were independently capable of supporting themselves would be in office. And if you were someone, say, in a constituency, a working class constituency, and they decided to elect a member of Congress who they believed adequately represented their interests, and he was a working class person, or she was, and they just didn't have the ability to subsist without an income. Well, in theory, that per person would be precluded from taking office.
How big a job should it be? How many hours do they work now?
That's a very good question.
You know, like maybe 5 or 10 hours a week. Which is another thing, too. I believe in a kind of pyramid voting system where you have small group, like a group of 10, and you elect a representative from that group and on and on. And I think it's like 7 or 8 layers. It would be the whole population of the United States. But it would be more fair representation. And with all the ridiculous laws they pass anyway that are all related to somebody's pocket and the riders that are on them, you know, most of them are pretty well unnecessary. How much effort does it actually take to govern? You know.
Well, you raise very
Lord,
good point.
That sounds a lot like the Amway plan.
Right, exactly.
You raise very good points, Robert. And I'm sure a lot of these elected officials, you know, you say how many hours a week do they work? And I'm sure a lot of these people will tell you, how many hours a week do I work? I work all the time. Every time I go to a dinner, every time I take a trip, every time I do it.
Mostly at being reelected and mostly at making, you know, backroom deals to make money.
Well, I'm not going to dispute you on that. I'm not privy to the first-hand knowledge of these things, but I'm not going to disagree with you.
Well, look at how the bailout got passed.
Exactly.
John, you've been really quiet, and I hate it when you're quiet because it usually means that there's trouble in them nah hills.
Not at all, Simon. I was just thinking you guys are getting a little esoteric for me, and I really miss arguing with Manny.
Hey, I listen to you guys, you know, fairly often. I download it and I put the earbuds in and I sleep with you all. Anyway, because I have one of those hamster cage sort of brains and I can't just lay down and go to sleep, so I have to put the earbuds in. But a lot of times I'll back it up and, you know, listen to most of it. But I've got to say, John, I think you're my favorite. You're the funniest of all. You know, you have a lot of good stuff to say. I felt like I had to call up and give you a little backup here, brother. You know, you're being
Father, I appreciate it.
John doesn't need any help.
Hey, Robert, if you listen long enough, Simon will say something intelligent.
Wait a minute. Before you go, I found the Constitution, Article 2, Section 6, and it says, and I quote, "The senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their services to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall in all cases, except treason, felony, and breach of the peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses, and in going to and returning from the same or for any speech," blah, blah, blah.
Well, hey, talk about treason and felonies. I mean, they're committing those all the time in my mind.
Well, all it says is that while they're actually attending a session, they can't be arrested because presumably if they're attending a session, their vote must be cast and then the session must be adjourned. But when it's adjourned, then that means the Constitution does not prohibit them from being arrested. But there it is, Section 6, Article 2, they shall receive a compensation for their services.
Peter, have you ever heard of the missing 13th Amendment?
The missing 13th Amendment? No, I've never heard of the missing 13th Amendment, and now I'm curious as to what the 13th Amendment says.
Well, it talks about remuneration by foreign powers and terms of nobility. For instance, a lawyer would not be called Esquire, and a judge would not be called Your Honor. And it was pretty nearly ratified, and it actually appears in history books out of the middle of the last century.
Very interesting. Well, this so-called full text of the Constitution doesn't seem to have the amendments, which is irritating. But I have to look at that. I seem to recall something about remuneration, but it's been so long since I've read that phrase.
But back to the issue of gun control, which, by the way, is learning how to use them properly.
I agree.
But let's discuss the issues that the NRA brought up. And can you deny that there's a mental health problem in this country? Can you deny that our society is pervasive with violence?
Absolutely not. I totally agree with it. The question is what those facts lead you to conclude. I think that with the truth of those facts and adding to that a dangerous mix of abundant supply of military assault weapons, to ask the question is to answer it. If you knew that there were a bunch of mentally ill people out there who had a propensity towards violence, would you be in favor of giving them an unlimited supply of military assault weapons? Every country and every reasonable minded leader anywhere would say that's crazy.
Those people should be institutionalized as they were at one time and aren't now, because the government would rather spend money killing foreigners than helping people in this country.
You know, there's a concept of problem solving, and in the concept of problem solving, if you can address a problem in the most direct, simplistic manner feasible, that's usually the best solution. And what you're talking about, institutionalizing people just so everybody else can have military assault weapons, in my mind, is putting the cart before the horse. There's a much more simple solution.
Well, that's not what I was saying. I was saying that people that are mentally ill, that are violent, need to be institutionalized. I'm not even considering the gun issue with that.
Well, let me ask you something. If they're institutionalized in mental asylum, should they be able to own military assault weapons?
Well, I suppose if like six psychiatrists testify that they're not violent anymore and they've had a lobotomy, sure, you know.
But that's what it would take. The fact that they're in a mental institution wouldn't deter you in and of itself. I mean, just because they're in a mental institution doesn't mean they can't own a firearm. If we got to get six psychiatrists who would basically say, well, yeah, they're mentally unstable, but they're not violent. So, yeah, they could own a military assault weapon, sure.
No, I meant the other way, you know, once they're released, professional. Well, don't even get me started on psychiatry and the medical profession and the DSM and the pharmaceutical industry. But anyway.
Well, those are all subjects near and dear to our heart. So next time, we would like to get you started on those topics.
I'm sat here absolutely aghast.
It's my fault, Simon. I'm going to try to shut up. It's impossible right now, but I will.
No.
Pretty quiet, Peter, but I guess they really hit the passion button on you.
I apologize. I mean, it really does. It's ludicrous. Most of the stuff that I think we talk about is trivial by comparison. I mean, this just stuff really sets me off. It just, how could it not? I mean,
Peter, you and I are in broad agreement on lots of things. And this gun thing just winds my crank. I mean, I would lose it if my wife walked in one day and said, "Look what I got, honey, an AK-47."
And you would have to say, yes, dear, no problem.
No, I'd take it out back and hit it with a hammer. I mean,
well, you're a better man than I am, because I got to tell you, I think deep down, I would love to own one of those things. I think they're awesome machines, awesome weapons, and I think it would be great if I had a military assault rifle and an arsenal in my home. I think I would feel like a one-man army. But I can't help but feel that if everybody has that, we've made the world an incredibly unsafe, dangerous place, and we're clinging to it because of some vestigial interpretation of a sentence that no longer applies anymore. And it just seems ludicrous to me.
Well, you know, it makes me think that it's the same sort of premise as martial arts. You know, learning to defend yourself gives you confidence. So, you know, when you've got that AK-47, it'll give you a little confidence, I guess, huh?
Well, I think it does. And I got to tell you, there's a part of me that wants to go to Dick's Sporting Goods right now and start buying everything in sight. But it's because it feels like the whole darn world is turning into a bunch of people who at any moment are just going to go berserk and just do whatever they want.
Well, that's because of the hypocrisy in our society.
It's because of human nature is what it is, I'm sorry to say.
John,
I'd like to look at the brighter side. I saw a very interesting study where they, with infants, where they had the puppet show where one puppet helped this guy open up a box and the other puppet you would close the box down and make it harder. And they 85% of the time they chose the puppet that was the helper puppet.
All right. Are you sure it was incense and not bath salts?
Well, I could tell you about that, too, but that's another story. And no one knocked my eye on it right now. But I don't really – even the martial arts thing is disturbing to me, you know, even though it's supposed to, you know, give people confidence, what have you.
Well, don't you want to study martial arts, Robert? Don't you want to go out there and study kung fu or jiu-jitsu or something? I do. I want to do it.
Well, tai chi maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know, it would be awesome.
I'm 62 years old, you know. I don't want to.
You're 62 years young, Robert. You're 62 years young.
Well, that's true. I'm very childlike, if not childish.
Well, I like to tell people my age and then say, but it's okay, I'm very immature for my age.
Exactly. You know, like I'm a dirty old man, but I come by it naturally because I was a dirty young man once. But
oh, there we go. There we go.
Talk about, you know, wanting to own one. It's like, it just seems like part of the genetics of men. Like, you know, we like to see things blow up and, you know, we like things with loud noises. Hey, look at Harleys. I wanted to write an article, you know, the conformity of nonconformity. You know, I'm like really anti-tattoo and machoism and all that sort of thing. Well, actually, I lived most of my life in Daytona Beach, and that's been, you know, it's like biker city, basically. And it's like, I love the free spirit that they have, but I am not into the macho, sexist, racist crap, you know.
You raise a good point about it being in our genes. I think there's something in probably more so men in general, but probably in all people, that makes them want to take up firearms. It's a natural part of our history. It's a natural part of our evolution. We live in a world where survival is always an issue in one form or another. And we evolved from creatures who had to fight for survival in the wild. But presumably we've evolved to a certain level now. Presumably.
So you're a Darwinist, huh?
I am a Darwinist, yes.
Nothing wrong with Darwin.
In that case, I'm an atheist, and, you know, I am so down on religion. I think that was a big problem in the Constitution. I think an atheist society, which, by the way, is the fastest growing group of people
the
having...
religious practitioners. The fastest growing religion in America is atheism.
Well, I guess you could say that. There's another interesting show on Blog Talk Radio called The Thinking Atheist, and he really brings up some points. But,
Okay. I'm looking at the clock. We've got about 5 minutes left on the program, and we're obviously not going to be able to cover all of the items that I had planned.
Imagine that, Simon.
Yeah, just imagine that. But I do want to bring up politics, the fiscal cliff.
Oh, no.
Yeah. What happened to Plan B? I thought that was a morning after contraceptive pill. I mean, it is Boehner toast? I mean, he can't even keep his own people in check.
Well, Simon, let me offer a couple quick observations, and then you know my opinion of fiscal cliff. But I was really impressed with your AK-47 story, because I was thinking at your age, a piece of cold, hard steel in your hand is more exhilarating than a good wank.
That you wish was a warm, hard piece of steel, right?
And also, well, Simon, you're British. You understand that. But also, after listening to Peter and Robert, I feel like I'm imposing on a Dr. Phil therapy session.
Oh, dude. Okay, John. Tell us about the fiscal cliff. I mean, have the GOP dug their own graves?
Simon, I have no interest in the fiscal cliff. I told you, it's just a strategy by Obama to extend the debt limit.
Oh.
Well, nothing is going to happen to us as individuals, whether or not, you know, it falls off the cliff or not. That is not going to happen. As a matter of fact, I was reading that, you know, we're closely approaching becoming the world's major producer of natural gas, and that in another 10 years, we will be the world's biggest oil producer because of new drilling techniques they have, and that things are going to be great again.
Oh, I love this. We're only becoming the greatest producer of natural gas because of refried beans.
Well, that was pretty good, Simon.
Not to mention quarter pounders.
Right. okay, so the popular press has backed off a little bit, you know, and they're now saying, oh, well, it really doesn't matter if an agreement is reached by January 1st, but there won't be any serious consequences for weeks. What do the kids do? You know, Boehner and Obama. They go on, vacation. Peter, do you think that sends a great message to the voters?
Well, I think most voters have the impression that, you know, Robert and John have just enunciated, which is, you know, I don't think they really comprehend the fiscal cliff. I think they think that it means nothing to them one way or another. And I think they basically view it as something that's beyond their control, and they can't, you know, they can't really do anything about it. And they probably don't really fully grasp what these people are arguing and fighting about. And they don't care even if they do. I think that if, quote unquote, the fiscal cliff is reached, everyone will feel it, because there'll be a general tax increase for everyone, slightly for some, maybe more for others.
If you're unfortunate,
I think,
enough to have to pay taxes, like 47% of the, or 53% of the population.
I'm sorry, Robert, I didn't catch that.
if you're unfortunate enough to have to pay taxes, like only 53% of the population does, is that not true, going to by Romney's 47%?
I don't know about those numbers. I believe everyone is responsible for paying their tax, and I pay my taxes. I probably pay more than I should, and I think we are going to go over the fiscal cliff. The message that it sends when you, in a negotiating tactic, when there's a discussion on the table and you walk away, is the impression it conveys to the other side you're negotiating with is that you don't care if you get a deal, and you're willing to risk, quote unquote, going over the cliff. And that's just the general rule of negotiation. Well, we're walking away from the table now. We're going to go take a trip, and we'll pick this up later. The impression you're sending is that you're not that highly motivated to make a deal. Maybe that's just poker. Maybe that's just a bluff. Maybe that's the way they really feel. I don't know.
Well, sometimes when people walk away from the table, they walk away because they were infuriated, because they're too emotionally involved, and, you know, they have to regroup. So there's the other side of that, I suppose.
Okay. Well, I mean, for whatever it is, you're basically telling the other side that you don't want to negotiate right now, for whatever reason it is. I tend to think it's more, you know, you decided
to... It projects apathy. It projects, you know, complete apathy.
Okay. It projects apathy. And, I guess some of these guys, maybe they don't care about the consequence. Maybe it doesn't matter to them. Maybe they're really just trying to set up the blame game. Maybe they know there's not going to be a resolution. Maybe it's all a tactic to put it off to the 11th hour and 59 minute mark and then do a deal at that point, which is what I suspect it is, but you can never be certain.
Okay, folks, we have to draw this program to a close. I want to thank everyone, and everyone will get their last words. John, I'm going to start with you.
All right, Simon, I'll try to be quick. Just in response to Peter, this is very complicated, and it might be beyond me, so I'd like to give your listeners a research project. It's not difficult. Look up how much taxes and revenue the government takes in daily. Look up how much they expend through the cost of running the government and entitlements. And look up the daily rate that the government has to pay just on the interest rate on the debt. And I don't think the fiscal cliff is going to affect that at all. And that's where I see the danger. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't say, in the spirit of giving at this time of year, Christmas coming up. No apologies to you, Robert, by the way, as an atheist. At the risk of exposing myself as a sentimentalist, I'd like to remind people about this time of year, the spirit of giving, because this really impacted me at a young age. That's why I say sentimental. Two of my favorite literary characters are Jean Valjean and the Bishop of Digny. Of course, that's Les Miserables by the great Victor Hugo. It's a story of rehabilitation, redemption, and salvation that speaks to me the obligation people have to one another. The bishop inspired Jean Valjean to be a crusader for justice, charity, and goodwill when he could have sentenced them to the prison and doing hard labor for life, but he gave him a second chance, and he rehabilitated himself. So I'd like to say, if you've ever been the beneficiary of kindness, as I have many times in my life, you have an obligation and a duty to extend that same kindness to others. And don't rely on the government to do it. And that's why I think there's a disconnection among us, because everybody looks to the government to be charitable to people, and they don't realize we still have a personal responsibility. And I'd like to wish you guys happy holidays. And, Simon, I really enjoyed the service you perform with your show. I hope it's informative, insightful to people, and I wish you guys the best and Happy New Year.
And John, I reciprocate that feeling.
I love you, Simon.
Oh,
and
Lord,
like
let's not talk it into it.
If you weren't gentlemen, I wouldn't appear on your show.
Okay. It's not often that I ask a guest for their parting thoughts, but Robert, you introduced some interesting ideas in a minute or less. Would you like to give us our parting thoughts?
I would, and thank you very much for having me on. Peace on earth and goodwill to all. And I am celebrating Christmas only because the woman here does, and most people do. But it's basically a pagan holiday anyway. But I want to thank you very much, and I really enjoyed being on the show and talking to you folks finally after having listened to you so many times.
Our pleasure, our absolute pleasure, and have a delightful Christmas. I refuse to say happy holidays. I'm just a Christmas kind of a guy.
You're a great American, Robert.
And,
thank you, John. You too. Well, I believe all of us are.
And Peter, your parting comments.
Well, I wish everyone happy holidays and a happy new year. And Robert, I'm very grateful you called in. And if there's anybody else out there listening, I hope you call in as well. I really like hearing other people's perspectives. And Robert, I hope you call back too, because it sounds like you've got a few more issues that we still have to discuss. So Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
this is Simon Barrett. I have nothing left to say other than have a happy, fun, and healthy Christmas. I refuse to say holiday. I grew up knowing it as Christmas. I don't think we're going to be back next week, but I'm pretty certain we'll be back in the new year. Until then, everyone be happy, be safe, and have fun. Till then, goodbye.